Today's episode is brought to you by AOS Kitchens, the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists. Welcome to another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast. Today we have got Elky, also known as the Smoking Elk, joining us. He's talking about all things barbecue from his school, his partnership with brands like Thermapen, and his journey into barbecue and where he is now. So without much further ado, here's Elky.
Okay, so hello, Elky. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today. For anyone who doesn't know you, firstly, I've been living under a rock, but do you want to explain who you are, how you got into everything?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on this. Who am I? So the Smoking Elk. Elky's my nickname. My actual name is Dan, but only my mother calls me that. So we go with Elky. So a little bit of background, I guess. Obviously, I'm a bit of a barbecue fanatic. Love cooking with fire, love cooking with charcoal. Probably been seriously into it for 6 or 7 years. You know, the normal history of having a barbecue, probably for longer than 6 or 7 years, you go through the normal kind of 10, 15 years of having a gas barbecue that costs 100 quid. It rusts out over the winter, gets mouldy, and replace it with another one the following summer. So gone through that, cooking the sausages and the burgers and the butcher's packs. And I think really kind of got into it probably 6 or 7 years ago by watching things like Man versus Food, seeing briskets on there and pulled pork and ribs. And obviously, you know, 6, 7 years ago, there's not really any decent barbecue restaurants in the UK, unless you want to go to the Harvester and have some microwave ribs or whatever. So it's a case of do it yourself. I would get over there, which is going to cost a lot of money, or do it yourself. So decided to do it myself, went down a bit of a rabbit hole, and here I am kind of 7 years later, a massive fire cooking addict.
And I suppose you literally do everything in terms of barbecue now, right? So you said you started just Man versus Food, seeing the briskets, pulled porks, but there's pretty much nothing you don't do on the barbecue now, isn't there?
No, I mean, I think, you know, what's something that sums it up nicely is, you know, when I tell some people that I cook on the barbecue all year round, they say, oh, so you eat barbecue food all year round? And I'm like, no, I eat food cooked on the barbecue all year round. You know, there's a big difference. They think because you barbecue all year round, I'm constantly eating hot dogs and burgers and ribs and stuff. But, you know, cooking with fire, cooking on barbecues, as you know, it's not just about doing the classics. Anything you can do in the kitchen, you can cook on a barbecue with the added element of kind of fire, smoke, charcoal flavour. So, yeah, I like to experiment. I like a lot of well cuisine. I like Thai food and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and it works brilliantly on barbecues. So, yeah, anything you can do in the kitchen, I like to cook outside.
So when you were talking about, obviously, you know, 10, 15 years of replacing your gas barbecue every year, as obviously a lot of us do, when you kind of really got into barbecue, what transition did you make from that kind of cheap and cheerful gas barbecue? What was the first serious barbecue you got into that was perhaps not gas?
So I think it probably was gas, because you know, I bought many from B&Q that were cheap and rubbish and nasty. Not saying anything bad about B&Q. I think, you know, my first serious barbecue purchase, you know, where you actually spend a bit of money, was a Weber Spirit. So again, it was a gas, cooked on that for a while. I thought, you know, this is good. I've actually got a proper barbecue. And then obviously started watching those shows and started thinking, well, I need to start learning how to smoke something. So Weber Smoky Mountain, I'm sure a lot of beginners kind of go with. Went with a Weber Smoky Mountain, had a few friends round for dinner. The main event was going to be some smoked beer can chicken. I was really excited, and I thought that if I can't see lots of dirty grey smoke coming out the top, then I'm not doing it properly. So in goes wood chunk after wood chunk after wood chunk. I mean, my guests were very polite about it. The chicken came out, I was all excited, and they all had a bite and said, they said, you can certainly taste that it's been smoked, I think was the polite. it tasted a bonfire. So the Weber Smoky Mountain, obviously Weber kettle, and then it kind of went on from there. But I think the real turning point for me was getting a Kamado. So as you're probably aware, I work quite closely with Kamado Joe now, but back at the time, I wanted to get a ceramic. I looked at Big Green Egg and Kamado Joe, decided on a Kamado Joe. And I think just having one of them, and once you learn to use it, is a bit of a game changer for me, because once you learn how to use it, it made things easier. It kind of simplified things, and it made you want to cook on it more. And the more you wanted to cook, the more adventurous you got, the more you cook, and it kind of spirals from there. So, a little bit of a mixed bag, really.
And just looking on your Instagram, as you've said yourself, so many different types of food, because you can cook everything on a barbecue. But what are your favorite things to do? Is it to surprise people and show how versatile they are? Or do you have a certain kind of go-to that in your own spare time you like to cook?
I'm a big lover of Thai food. So I like to kind of do Thai food on a barbecue and maybe put a twist on Thai food. So I run a barbecue school, and one of the kind of things that I teach, I kind of do a Thai theme on one of the classes, like the master class. So we kind of do pad kwa pao, which is kind of pork and Thai basil, which is a stir fry dish that shows that you can use pots and pans on a barbecue and stir fry. But then I do an over the top kind of beef massaman. So it's just a normal kind of massaman curry, but the beef shin sits over the top of the curry, taking on some cherry smoke. And then that all kind of, as it's cooking, it kind of drips into the curry. And then you put the cherry smoke beef into the curry and let it finish kind of braising until it falls apart. So just stuff like that, which is, you know, kind of normal food, but with a smoky twist. And, you know, that kind of thing is a crowd pleaser. And then, you know, things like shawarmas and anything big that looks good, anything theatrical, that people come around and say, bloody hell, how have you done that on a barbecue kind of thing, is stuff that I like to do. Because it's all about the social aspects and a bit of theatre for me.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more.
Also, you were the first person when I first started kind of doing barbecue on the Instagram and having a look at things, that was the first proponent for me for cooking to temperature as well. It was something that you were the first person to introduce me to that. And everyone talks about that now, because that's what people should do, of course. But thank you for that lesson. But anyone gets so much tips just from looking at your Instagram. It must be hard not to give away all of this barbecue school secrets while you're doing it.
I think I'm a bit of a sucker for doing that, really, because, you know, I'm kind of earlier in the year, I'm halfway through the year of doing classes, and I'm knocking out reels with dishes, with recipes of stuff that I'm cooking on the classes. And I'm thinking, I should really do this once the classes are finished and I change the classes. but no, I mean, touching back on, you know, using cooking to temperature, for me, that was one of the game changers early on. And I don't know why. I kind of, you know, you discover this stuff when you start to barbecue, but not when you just cook in general. And I think, you know, I kind of got into the barbecue community, Facebook groups like Countrywood Smoke and whatnot. And one of the first things you pick up is, you know, get yourself an instant read thermometer. So I got myself a Thermapen, and again, it's a game changer, because it makes you a better cook. So you're cooking meat, and you're cooking it well. But because you're cooking at the temperature, and the funny thing is, when you do events and demos and stuff, you can use all the high tech barbecues and stuff. You know, you'll cook on Kamado Joes and stuff, and you'll dish out a bit of chicken, and the first thing they say is, "Oh, how long did you cook that for then?" Or, you know, "What barbecue have you cooked that in that's made that so juicy?" And you know, it's because you cook at the temperature. So that's one of the kind of first things, one of the first game changers for me when you do get into barbecue, is how important that is.
Actually, that's a really good point. You know, you're talking about like the Facebook groups, Countrywood Smoke and those types. So I'm a member of a few of them, like the Smoky Mountain groups and the Weber Kettle groups, as well as Country Smoke and things. And actually, still, the amount of people every single day that you go on and see a post, how long should I cook a brisket for? How long should I cook? And the point is, you shouldn't time it. You should be just cooking until that meat is at that temperature that you need to pull. But it is almost the first question, isn't it, that anyone asks, how long do I cook this for?
It is, yeah. But I think, you know, the main reason for that, I think supermarkets could probably do a bit more, and food packaging and that kind of stuff, because everything you buy in a supermarket, if you buy chicken or you buy a roasting joint, it's always cook it for an hour and a half per kilo, or half an hour per kilo, or whatever, plus half an hour. And it's like, you know, where's the science behind that? They're basically going to get you to overcook that product because they don't want you to undercook it. So, but you'd think, you know, if supermarkets just start stocking some instant read thermometers, start kind of putting on the packaging, put the times on there by all means, but stick on the packaging, ideal temperature for this should be, you know, 63 degrees or 73 degrees or whatever it's going to be for that cut of meat. And that's going to help educate people that, you know, turkey's a great example. People don't like turkey because people eat dry turkey because whoever's cooking it leaves it in the oven for half an hour or an hour longer than what they need to because they don't want to poison Aunt Mavis or whatever, or you know, Nan's coming around and we don't want her to drop dead, so we better leave it in for another half hour, or they cut into it and all the juices run out, and that's why nobody likes turkey at Christmas, because they're not eating it properly, they're not eating well-cooked turkey.
I think it, like, the fundamentals are wrong in how we're taught cooking. So doing cooking at school, I even did like catering as GCSE because I'm food obsessed. And we're always told, right, chicken, you take it over 75. Well, how do we make sure it's over 75? Well, you cut it and check. Why not use a thermometer? They don't even teach that as the basics in school. So it's like a ground-up learning that people need to re-educate themselves if they want to get the most out of cooking. But again, barbecue classes and things and learning and research will help people do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I obviously run the barbecue school, and it's one of the first things that I teach at the barbecue school. You know, when we do the masterclasses, most people have know they use a Fermi pen, they use an instant reading thermometer, and know. But the beginners classes, you know, the a couple of accessories that I show them straight away is a chimney starter, because most of these people that come to the beginners classes are used to cooking on a gas barbecue, and I ask them why they're cooking on gas. Oh, because it's quicker, I haven't got time to light charcoal. So you show them a chimney starter, you show them that it's ready to go in 10 minutes, and they're like, bloody hell, that's a game changer. But then you show them an instant read thermometer, and then when you're cooking the food and this food is coming off and it's cooked to the perfect temperature, you've stuck your thermopen in there, your steak's perfect, your chicken's juicy. They're like, again, it's a game changer. And the thing is, you know, thermopens, they don't cost a lot considering. I mean, look at the cost of meat now. If you're gonna do something nice for Christmas, you're gonna get a turkey that's 50, 60 quid, or maybe, you know, sometimes even more. You're gonna get a rib of beef that's 50, 60 quid. For half that price, you get a thermometer that's going to last a lifetime and ensure that you're not going to cock up any other, you know, any of your dinners and stuff. And but importantly, is you're not going to undercook it, but almost as importantly for us, obviously, you don't want to undercook it, do you?
No. And with Christmas coming up, perfect birthday present or birthday Christmas present for the barbecuer in your life, right?
Yeah. I think Thermopen have actually got some deals on at the minute where... They've released a new thermopen, so they've released a new, I think it's Midnight Blue thermopen, because they celebrate their 30th anniversary. They've been going 30 years, which is also crazy. I mean, I've been buying them for 6 or 7 years, and I remember like my first thermopen, and you know, there's been a few revisions since then, but they've been going 30 years and nearly 40 years as a business, which is mad. But yeah, they're, I think they're doing some Christmas bundles with Genevieve Taylor. You know, Genevieve Eats on Instagram, one of her books, along with a thermopen and the curry guy. I've met them both great people, both big fans of thermopen as well. So you know, and they've got great books. I've got the curry guy coming to the barbecue school next year, actually, which will be good. He's coming down to do a few days.
Oh, awesome!
But yeah, no. So ideal Christmas presents. And if somebody gets it on Christmas morning, they're not going to cock up the turkey, are they?
Absolutely. And in terms of quality, I've had my thermopins since 2015. Still works an absolute dream. I think I've actually still got the same battery, believe it or not, as in the original. So it just, they last.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a big cream one that I use in the kitchen. That my missus uses, because I don't really cook in the kitchen. I say I keep it in the kitchen, but if I'm not I'm not cooking on the barbecue, I'm not cooking. So my missus has got one indoors, and you know, I've had for 7 years. I've got one in the barbecue shack that I stupidly left near some lit charcoal, and it's kind of, I can't open it all the way. It kind of gets stuck at a kind of right angle where the bend is melted. Still works a treat. I mean, I've had them left out in the rain and all sorts, and yeah, they can take a battering, that's for sure.
So I also just want to you've mentioned the school, your barbecue school, a couple of times. I mean, that's a new venture for you, right? This is 2022 it launched.
Yeah, so I first had the idea for it. I mean, not the idea for it, you know, there's other people doing barbecue schools, but I first thought, you know, this is something that I want to do back in 2019, towards the end of 2019. So I was thinking about doing it, launching it kind of in the summer of 2020 at my last place. Obviously COVID hit, so it didn't happen. And also, I'm not sure whether I was ready for it back then. I'm kind of glad that I waited till this year. I wasn't quite ready for it then. Knowing what I do now compared to 2 years ago is a big difference. And the venue probably wasn't quite right, not quite big enough at my last place. My missus was worried about where people were going to go and have a pee. She doesn't want people coming in the house, you know, which is understandable, especially if people have a couple of drinks and stuff, people coming in and out. So you know, for one reason or another, it didn't happen then. And then I think, you know, it all went a bit nuts with COVID, didn't it? And, you know, the barbecue world in the UK seemed to just go absolutely mental. So I think, you know, over those 2 years, it got to a point where, yeah, I do really want to do this school. I'd had a couple of good years at work, and I commissioned, so sales wise. And I said to the missus, you know, a couple of years early, let's have a look and see whether there's any houses out there that we can move to that are maybe a bit bigger. And we found somewhere that was way above budget. Like, we looked at one price, there was nothing there. Looked at the next price, nothing there. Looked at the next price, still nothing. And then my missus said, why don't we look at the next one up and see if we can put an offer in? And we looked and we found this house. And we had a look around it, and, you know, it needs a lot of work doing. We said we're never going to buy another doer-upper because our first house was a complete renovation job. Mm. But then we walked out into the garden, and the garden was absolutely huge. And as soon as we left the house, we just looked at each other and said, you know, we have to make this happen. So, you know, begged, borrowed and stealed, raided the savings and anything else, and we bought the house in December last year, and then went straight to work to build the barbecue school, because I knew at some point this year, you know, I've been busy doing the barbecue stuff. I've also been busy with work, and I knew this year it would kind of get to a bit of a tipping point where I either really knuckle down and concentrate on the day job, or really make a go of the barbecue world. And I think once the shack was built, we were kind of, I was stood outside. We were filming one day with my videographer. We're doing some videos for YouTube. The sun was shining. We had a little half-time beer, as you do. And I thought, I don't want to go back to the sales job. I don't want to do it anymore. And I literally handed in my notice the next day. Well, I didn't actually talk it over with my wife, because I tried ringing her in the morning and she'd taken my little boy swimming. So I just handed in my notice and told her when she come home.
How was that reaction?
Oh, she's like, well, if you think we can do it, then let's do it. So, you know, she's been good as gold. She's always supported, my decisions and doing the barbecue stuff. So yeah, that was kind of it. The barbecue school was built. It was ready to go end of April. Funny enough, the first class that I did was Thermapen. Mm. I sent a team down to support me for the first class, because I do a lot of work for Thermapen anyway. So it's kind of nice for them to kind of be my first class, you know, kind of practice one, so to speak, because I quit my job before I'd even taught a class, which is, you know, borrowed a load of money to buy the house, borrowed a load of money to do it up. Never done a barbecue class and quit my job. So,
fortune favors the brave, eh?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm one of these guys. So, you know, I'm very impulsive. If I get an idea, I just have to do it there and then. So I did it, and yeah, so far so good. Done 18 classes so far this year. Had to take a couple of months off in July and August because newborn baby. And October, November, I've had to take a bit of time off for family reasons as well. So instead of doing 18 classes in the time that I've done, bear in mind, you know, we've taken some of the busiest months out of action. It's been really good, yeah. So, but you know, I'm not one to rest on my laurels, and I know next year's kind of the big year to kind of really give it a push. But yeah, enjoying it so far.
Are you still focused? Obviously, again, you mentioned YouTube before that, and again, followed your channel. And I know that during lockdown, you were doing a kind of video podcast almost, weren't you, with interviewing various different guests during lockdown. Are you still continuing to kind of work on your channel, or is very much all your efforts now going into the school?
No, absolutely keeping up the social media content. I think to make a success of this, you need to have a few different avenues and a few different options. If I'm just teaching barbecue classes, you know, three times a week or something, it's soon going to get boring. Not boring, but because you like doing it, but you need a bit of variety, I find. Yeah. So I like to create the content. I like to make YouTube videos. I like to, you know, do the reels and stuff on Instagram. I work with some fantastic brands, Thermapen, Kamado Joe, and create kind of monthly content for them. The show that we did was great, by the way, the lockdown barbecue show, because it's in lockdown, we could email, nobody could go anywhere like, around the world. So we could email anybody and, oh, can we have a chat? They're like, yeah, okay. Like, because they're not at their restaurants. They've got no other, they've got nowhere else to be. So, you know, I said to, I think we have Fat Sam Eats, the guy on Instagram. So I said to him, if you ever want to chat to any of your heroes, just start a podcast, start an online, you know, barbecue show. You know, we're talking to like Stephen Reuchlin who wrote the Barbecue Bible. Yeah, some of the people like Jess Piles, like some of the people we were talking to was ridiculous. I'd never be able to do it now without the lockdowns. But yeah, anyway, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. So yeah, the content creation is fantastic. I'm always going to be doing that. I like putting out YouTube videos, educating people that way. The classes, and then I also do a lot of events, so demos and kind of festivals and that kind of stuff. So I think next year I'll be out and about a lot more as well.
When do you get time to relax?
that is me relaxing. If I'm out there, if I'm out in the open with a barbecue with some food cooking away, you know, it's not a job to me. Like, there's a saying, isn't there? If you do something you love for a living, you're never going to work another day in your life, and that's so true. Don't get me wrong; it can get tiring. You know, we did. For Commando Joe last year, we did a pub in the park and we did the opening one. And it's 4 days in a row. So it's Thursday evening and then Friday, Saturday and Sunday are all kind of double days. So you have people come in at 11 till 4 and then it opens again 5 till 10 kind of thing. So we were there doing, you know, we were getting there at 7 in the morning and going home at midnight for 3 days. So you're knackered by the end of it. I mean, I think we went to watch the Happy Mondays closing it on Sunday. And me and Jim only slagging. We could barely walk. I stood there and I had to keep like standing from one foot to the other because they were aching so much. But absolutely loved every minute of it. And, you know, a week later we said we would have done it again. But a funny story from Pub in the Park. And you're going to put this out there. So we'll see if we can find out what really happened. But on the first night, we'd always put a pork shoulder on. Ready for the next day, so we've got it rested, and when the first crowd come in, we've got this pork shoulder ready to go. We don't have to do loads of prep for it, so we stuck one on. We come back at 7 in the morning, and you can smell the pork. You can smell the pork butt in the air. It smells beautiful. So we go over to the Commando Joe, and the first thing you check is the temperature of it, because you set the temperature the night before. You want to make sure it's still the temperature that you set it at. Yeah, perfect. Lifted the lid up. There's no pork butt. It's gone. you know, none of us have a clue where it went. We thought because Weber were next to us, and so we suspected foul play. We suspected sabotage. So we said to Weber, "Have you nicked our pork butt?" They're like, "No, we haven't." So we've had a walk around the festival. Couldn't see anybody sitting there with pulled pork or anything. Couldn't find anyone serving up pulled pork that day. Spoke to security. They said, "Are you sure a fox didn't take it?" you know, can lift the lids of Commandos and just take them. But yeah, no, that's gone.
They're cunning animals, those foxes.
But no, it's gone, and it's a mystery to this day. So if anyone out there knows where our pork butt went, then let us know.
How do you save that situation?
We just had to. We were all hungover as well, so we got there a little bit later than what we thought because we knew there was going to be a pork butt. We're like, yeah, we'll get that out first, and then it gives us a bit of time to prep for the rest of the stuff. But because it wasn't there, we had to just get stuck in and just get loads more food on as quickly as possible.
It's inspiring, kind of talking to you and about how you take that leap. But I suppose it proves that you don't have. You know, there's the trappings of the day job that people kind of feel like they can't take these leaps of faith. But it's exciting to talk to someone who has done that. If someone was thinking about making a similar sort of leap, what sort of advice would you give them?
Go with your gut. I've always been one to kind of, you know, if I get an idea, you know, I'll quickly maybe crunch some numbers. And if I think I can do it, I'll just do it without kind of dwelling on it too long. Because if I dwell on it too long, then I might talk myself out of it. You know, I considered doing it last year, and I went to my employer and said, "Can I go down to?" The first thing I asked was if I could buy a holiday. And they said they came back 3 months later. They did some extensive research about how it works for other companies and stuff, because they were a good employer and they'd always try and accommodate. And they come back and said, no, we can't leave by holiday because we'd have to roll it out to the whole company and then it just gets messy. So then last year, the start of this year, I asked them about going down to a 4-day week. Mm-hmm. And they were considering it. And then just as we're kind of going to take it a step further, they're going to advertise for a sales support person and stuff. I decided then that I couldn't even make it work doing 4 days. So I just had to make the leap. But, you know, if anybody's thinking of doing it, just make sure, first and foremost, that your bread and butter, that you can pay your bills, if all else. So I worked out 3 different scenarios. What I know I've got coming in, what I think I could get coming in, and then somewhere in the middle, the kind of average. Because I do content creation for Thermapen, Commando Joe, and a few others, that's going to pay the bills. Then I add on the barbecue school, events and demos and stuff, and that makes it comfortable. And then anything else is a bonus. So just make sure that you can pay your bills, basically. and just make sure that you're definitely in a good place for it. You're in the right place for it, because it does look like a dream. You know, you quit your job and you're now doing barbecue 24/7. But you literally are doing barbecue 24/7. Like I quit my job and I've never been busier. Because literally with the barbecue school, there's a lot of admin, there's a lot of emails, there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, and then you're constantly thinking about plans. And so you kind of go from this day job where you switch off at 5 o'clock, can't be bothered until you're 9 o'clock the next day, to working for yourself and having to come up with a plan to make sure that the money's coming in, and not just for the next month or the next 2 months. You need to think ahead for the whole year and make sure that, you know, what's it going to look like at winter? Because obviously, you know, what we do is very much a seasonal thing, and, you know, for the general public. So I knew that I've got till September to do my classes, and then it's going to peter off. Christmas classes, happy days, that's going to see me through to January. And, you know, so you just got to think ahead and think, you know, there's a longer winter ahead where it's not going to be as, you know, you're not going to have as much coming in. So just plan, just make sure you can do it, and ultimately make sure you're doing it for the right reason, and you're doing it because you love it and not because, you know, you think it looks good and you think, you know, that you want a piece of that kind of thing.
Oh, I don't for a second think it's an easy choice to make. And it's just cooking barbecue in your back garden for your mates after a couple of beers on a Saturday is different to making a career out of it, isn't it? For sure. Mm. You've got to work hard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, cooking for your mates. I cook more now for content and for other people. It's kind of nice to get a break and actually cook something for yourself. But you do kind of, you go from cooking it because you're loving it and it's your dinner and you're doing that every day to literally cooking it for other people. So it is different. It's still just as much fun. Some people say that you can do it too much, you might burn out and stuff. I've not hit that stage yet, hopefully I won't, but you know, just it is a different beast, of course it is. But you know, if you do it for the right reasons and you love it, then yeah, I haven't regretted it one little bit.
So you mentioned, we've mentioned Commando Joe, and we've mentioned Thermapen a couple of times that you do work for. How did those kind of partnerships come about for you? Was it?
Thermapen was probably my first. Thermapen and Commando Joe were probably quite early on. I think with Thermapen, you know, that Thermapen are great. You know, as a business, they're a proper family run business. They just kind of get the barbecue community. They've got a real good community vibe. A lot of the community love Thermapen. They're always doing giveaways and various other cool stuff. So, you know, as a company, they're great. Like I said, they're a family-run business. Jason Webb is now the managing director. He's just taken the reins from his dad. You know, he's got aunties and uncles and cousins working there. I believe his dad started the business, nearly 40 years ago in a shed. And then obviously they're now Thermapen. So I think it came about, you know, I did one campaign for them where they were doing a giveaway and they said, could you cook something and then I'll do this giveaway. And we just kind of started chatting there. And then I'm very much a relationships guy. My last job was in IT sales. I was an account manager. So I had kind of 5 or 6 key accounts that I've dealt with for years, built relationships with, go and take them for lunch, have a few beers. And I'm very much a loyal and you know, relationship kind of guy. So to build relationships is very important for me. So, you know, ThermoPen, over the years, we've built a great relationship. And, you know, I'm now lucky enough to be a brand ambassador for them, create content for them, do cool stuff like this, and other cool stuff for them. And the same with Kamado Joe. I think with Kamado Joe, I mean, I bought my first one. And all of these companies that I do work with, is I genuinely love the product and love the brand. You know, I'm not going to just, if someone says, here, oh, can we chuck you this grill when, you know, you show it off for us? I turn down a fair amount. Gas barbecues, for example, I always advocate cooking with charcoal, cooking with fire. And as you know, this gas barbecue company said, can we send you this like top of the range gas barbecue? We want you to be a brand ambassador. And it's just no, because it's not who I am. It's not what my audience want to see. So it's all about, yeah, building relationships with brands that you love. Kamado Joe, I bought Kamado Joe in the first place. I then bought a Big Joe, and then Kamado Joe, you see me cooking on it a lot, and they started up their brand ambassador program called the Fire Squad. I was lucky enough to be invited onto that. And again, just built a relationship with them over the years. You know, Ben is the global marketing manager for them. Me and him get on great. So it's just, you know, a lot of people ask, oh, how do you get sent stuff? You know, how do I get on the radar of somebody? And it's just do what you love. You're working with brand, you know, using brands that you love. And if you're doing a good enough job, they'll come to you. And that's what it's all about. It's not, you know, they need to find you. They need to see you being passionate about, you know, their product. And I think that's, you know, that all the relationships that I've built, or most of the relationships that I've built, have come across, you know, started that way.
If you've been looking or thinking about an outdoor kitchen, then look no further than AOS Outdoor Kitchens.
They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Their extensive showroom is based just outside Bournemouth on the Dorset-Hampshire border, and as well as numerous in-store displays, also features a live outdoor kitchen where they cook every week on Kamado grills, pizza ovens, and all filmed and shown on YouTube.
They offer a wealth of knowledge on how to transform your patio into the most incredible outdoor dining area, with styles and options to suit every budget. And you can guarantee they will be able to create something perfectly suited to you and your home.
They stock and supply everything that you're going to need for outdoor cooking, including barbecues, Kamado ovens, pizza ovens, outdoor fridges, and every accessory that you would need to become the ultimate outdoor chef.
So if you want to make yourself the envy of your friends and neighbours, get in touch with them today to arrange a consultation and take the first step in transforming your back garden into the most incredible entertainment space.
Visit aoskitchens.co.uk. Yeah, I think that's a really important point about that, and sort of integrity of it. I mean, I'm sure you've probably been offered a lot more things than we have, but there has been occasions where they, you know, oh, could you talk about this on your podcast? Where it's like, well, we don't know who you are. We've never tried your products. We can't just openly go out and talk about them. It, you know, we need to feel comfortable to talk about those things. And I think what you've just said there is quite right. You can, I suppose, tell the people that are just in it to try and get free stuff, and the people that are actually in it because they love the products, they love the brands, and they just. The brand ambassador thing is probably the last thing they're thinking of. They just want to just show how passionate they are about using that brand and those products.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know getting paid to do this kind of stuff even existed. You know, when you're out there cooking on barbecues and stuff. I was cooking on the Kamado Joe a long time before I even started putting things on Instagram. It was only one of my friends. I started taking a couple of pictures and putting them on my personal Facebook. And a couple of friends said, oh, you want to put something on Instagram? You know, just started putting it on there, not thinking anything of it. And, you know, it just spiraled and you know, you start working with brands and stuff. But, you know, I think early on, yeah, you maybe get a little bit excited. Someone offers you a rub and says, can you promote this? And you're like, yeah, okay. You're like, whoa, look, I'm being sent all this cool stuff. But then it gets to a point, you know, you kind of need to know your worth, and you need to also know your audience. The last thing your audience want to see is you come across as a bit of an advertising board. You know, and if I accepted even half the products that get offered to me, it'd be like, oh, buy this, you know, and that's not who I am. So that's why I like to have kind of long-term relationships and all in their own kind of sector, so to speak, so they don't overlap. So Kamado Joe's, for example, I'm never going to cook on another Kamado. because I'm a big Commander Joe guy. If I walked up and started cooking on big green eggs, people were like, Ford, the big green egg, and now I'm trying to say, you know, the big green egg's better. Thermopen, I've been offered so many other different kind of instant read thermometers, and you know, other deals with thermometer brands, but you know what, why would I? I'm working with what, you know, what I see as the best company. And again, rubs, you know, there's so many companies doing rubs and stuff, and you know, it's great. I'll always try and support the small companies and, you know, buy some rubs from them and promote them and stuff, but you just got to be conscious of the fact that you just don't want to be every other bit of content you're putting out there is saying this rub's the best rub or this is the best this or whatever, because it's soon going to get boring. You know, there's a lot of people kind of you know, copy and paste, still doing the same kind of thing, and it's about kind of trying to differentiate yourself and just putting content out there that you want to make, and you know, that's what people want to see at the end of the day.
Also, I think like you can have much more of a personal relationship that way if you are only working with a select few companies, and it gives you a chance to go and visit them, learn more about the actual product, learn the science behind it, kind of have that sort of understanding. And it must be fascinating to be able to go to somewhere like Thermopen and actually look around and have them explain, well, it's not just like a stick thermometer, this is how it actually works. And surely that also leads back into your cooking skills then too.
Yeah, so again, back on the relationship thing, I was actually invited down to ETI, who obviously make the Thermopens, and went there last year and had a bit of a tour, and I just couldn't believe the place, really. That, you know, they've got there's a few industrial estates all in the same kind of area, and they've got three huge buildings within these industrial estates, so they're not just one building. They've got like 200 odd employees, and you know, when you think of the Thermopen, you just don't imagine this kind of, but I mean, they're massive, you know, they're big exporters of their product as well, so it's a British product, but it goes all over the world. You've got Thermoworks in the US that they're kind of very tightly linked to. But it was fascinating to go there, yeah. I mean, seeing so many people there, seeing the factory, everything there was hand-built. You know, there's no machines, just knocking all this stuff together. Every single Thermopen and all of their products are handmade. You know, they calibrate them all in icy water to make sure that's how accurate they are. Every single one gets kind of hand-calibrated, you know, in ice and stuff. And some of the machinery they got, I mean, some of it was top secret, they wouldn't tell me what it was, but you know, this is proper precision technology, because they don't just make Thermopens. I believe, you know, a big market there is as well, is commercial stuff, so you know, you go to the supermarket and they're baking their breads and all that kind of stuff, the chances are they're using ETI products. So you know, the Thermopen is a great kind of consumer product, but they've also got this huge kind of, you know, commercial business going on as well. So yeah, it's nice to go down there and see it all in action and see how the magic happens and meet some of the people there as well, because like I said, they're a family-run business, and most people there, you know, you can tell it's a good company because you've got people there that have been there 25-30 years. And when you got staff like that, you know you're pretty confident it's a decent company to work for.
So for you, Elky, what's going to be your plans for 2023? If you mentioned school, but what else have you got lined up for next year?
So the school's obviously going to play a very big part. You know, I want to get it to a comfortable stage. I mean, ideally for me, I'd love to get my missus be able to come and work for the business as well. She might have other ideas, but we'll see about that. So, you know, building the barbecue school up, because you know, this year's been good. I wouldn't say it's a success by any stretch yet, because it's very early stages. It's a new startup business, so get the word out a lot more. Because you know, there's only so far my Instagram reach is going to take me in terms of getting customers on board. So trying to get a lot more local people to come to the school, because that's where your word of mouth is going to come from. So kind of concentrating on that. Getting special guests to come to the barbecue school. So I mentioned earlier, I've got the curry guy coming for a few days. Sold out 3 days in the space of like 24 hours, which was crazy. Wow. So trying to get some kind of guest chefs along that aren't necessarily barbecue, but can you know, translate over to barbecue, because like, yeah, I said earlier, it's not all just about barbecue food, it's any food, just cooking it outdoors. So yeah, the barbecue school, carrying on making content. I want to carry on building my YouTube channel, building the Instagram, and I'd like to get out and about a lot more. So I'll be doing more events with Commando Joe next year, Hopefully some more pub in the parks and the festival kind of vibe. And maybe another idea is, you know, I'm getting asked from a few different places about doing barbecue classes kind of in Yorkshire or Scotland, or, you know, places where people, it's too far for people to come down to me, and I'll maybe kind of do a little bit of a tour and of some barbecue classes. But lots of ideas, and maybe start doing some pop-ups and stuff as well, because like I said, I want to keep it varied. So if you know, if you're doing a couple of classes a week, you do some content one day, do a pop-up and do an event, you know, it's lots of different things that just keep it interesting, because you don't want to just be doing the same thing over and over, rinse and repeat. So yeah, hopefully just getting out and about a lot more and meeting a lot more people.
You're going to give yourself a day off in that year, or?
Yeah, so I've got a rule, because I think the missus, I kind of I said to her, no, I won't be working like every weekend, you know. And then it's kind of got, well, in the summer, I might have to work Saturdays. But my little boy's off nursery on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I kind of said, if I'm going to work on a Saturday, I'll keep the Thursdays free. So we kind of still have the Thursday and then the Sunday. So, you know, I've given up my Pompey season ticket because, because we're terrible. No, I mean, I've had a season ticket for 25, 26 years. But, you know, it's got to a point, I love doing this. I love doing the barbecue stuff. I can't go and do two events one in a month on a Saturday and then expect to go to two Pompey games as well. And, you know, I've got, as much as I'd love to, but you know, I've got a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old now, and you know, it's good to spend time and do family stuff. So now I do have days off, yeah, but it's, you know, it's just nice. But I also look forward to Mondays as well, because I'm the opposite now of how it used to be. I look forward to Monday because I get to go out and barbecue again, because I've done family stuff all weekend, and now I can go and barbecue on a Monday.
Oh, people love Mondays. What?
I know, it's kind of like flipped.
So one of the things that we hold dear on the podcast is talking about barbecue fails, and obviously a lot of people learn by failing you know, correct their mistakes and things. And also a lot of the time they can be quite funny as well. So obviously you've put out some fantastic content, but you must have had some fails along the way. Is there any that you'd like to share with us?
I've run recently, actually. I think you know, we call them fails and failures, but they're all lessons. Yeah. You know, and I always try and say that to people as well. Because some people say, you know, I'm not confident enough to go and cook a brisket. I'm like, what happens if I screw it up? And you're never going to know until you go and do it. And you're going to make mistakes. You know, my first load of the first ever brisket I did was a complete fail. You know, went and bought, you see these briskets, you go and ask your butcher for a brisket, and you get this lean bit of flat. And, you know, yeah, I'm cooking a brisket. I'm going to do it. I'm like man versus food now. Like, as a ritual. And, you know, the first one I cooked was like a brick. Me and my two cousins still ate the lot and literally were dying on the sofa afterwards. But then I did a brisket the other day, and I like a few beers. So I've got the briskets on. The sun came out, and it was a ridiculously warm day for the time of the year. And me and the missus were sat in the garden, and it's kind of like we had a few more beers and then a few more, and the brisket was just an afterthought, and it didn't turn out that great. But you know, they're not failures. If all else fails, just stick it in the chili. You know, and I burn myself all the time. You know, I say at my classes, like if when we do the filming days, I'll constantly reach over, burn myself, singe my hairs or whatever. I said, if the camera's rolling all day on a filming day, I'll have a whole like section of B-reel with me sounding like Michael Jackson. But yeah, no, you know, we all make mistakes. I still make them now, of course, because we're all still learning. There's always going to be mistakes along the way. Just learn from it and put it into practice next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Is there anything else that we haven't spoken about yet, or any kind of questions or anything that you wanted to kind of bring up about, I don't know, the barbecue scene, you personally in your journey in barbecue, but is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I think we covered quite a bit. I mean, the barbecue scene, you know, if anybody's watching this and they're just starting to get into barbecue and stuff, the barbecue scene is coming on leaps and bounds in the UK. And it's, I think, you know, something I like to get across. And, you know, a lot of people myself included, you know, you get into barbecue and you start watching these YouTube videos and you see the briskets, like the American style briskets, yeah. The USDA briskets, and everybody wants to replicate it. So people are buying imported briskets, you know, they're buying Aussie grain-fed briskets because grain-fed has to be better because of the marbling. And they're buying USDA briskets that are coming over all these air miles over from the US. But we've got, you know, and the general message you seem to get on the Facebook groups is British brisket's terrible. You know, if you're going to cook a brisket, make sure you get a good one imported from America. And it's the wrong message to put across because, yes, a lot of brisket you're going to buy in America over here is going to be no good. It's good enough to maybe do pot roast with. You can smoke it and then braise it. But if you find to have a good quality butcher and, you know, we've got some of the best beef in the world. Why are we importing it from American stuff just to try and copy what the Americans do? Adapt to what we've got. And, you know, that you can get some fantastic results from grass-fed brisket. I like to cook mine a method that was called hot and fast. So you cook it at a higher temperature quicker because it's got less fat in it. If you cook it for 15 hours because it's got less fat and less marbling, it's more likely to dry out. You cook it hot and fast, you still get fantastic results. And the flavour of grass-fed over grain-fed is second to none. I'll take it any day. So I think, yeah, the message is stop buying imported meat. You know, just work with what we've got because we've got some of the best produce there is. So just adapt. It doesn't have to be all American style. You know, just use what we've got, use your imagination and just put your own spin on it.
Do you know what? We've spoken to Genevieve Taylor, who echoed exactly what you said. She was, you know, we released her episode in the summer as like a little summer special. When this goes out, there'll be an upcoming episode with Jack's Meat Shack, and we've got a butcher down in Kent. That's, again, everyone's replicating the same message, which is a good thing in the barbecue scene, that we're all advocates of using British beef and the quality of our British beef and not having to worry about importing, but also, like you said, the air miles, the environmental impact of importing that beef. So it's really good that yourself, you know, you're an advocate of that, but actually all of these people within the UK barbecue scene seem to be, you know, replicating that message that actually British beef is the quality beef that you need.
I think it's an important message, yeah, because I mean you go to some butchers, some online butchers, and they're like Uruguayan picanha and, you know, Argentinian this and Brazilian that, you know, oh, that sounds fancy, you know, I'll get myself, oh, it's a Uruguayan picanha, it's a top grump, you know, we've got it here, we've got beautiful grass-fed picanha here, and just it's just about, you know. And not every butcher, you know, some people are going to get a bit despondent. They're going to go to their local butcher. And a lot of butchers now, you know, butchers are dying trade, which is a shame, butchery. And a lot of butchers, they just haven't got the capacity to bring in whole carcasses and butcher it to spec. So they buy in the kind of, you know, the primals or the sub-primals or whatever. So you're going to go in there, you're going to ask for something specific that you've seen in America or whatever. They're just going to say they can't do it. And you know, you might get a bit despondent, but do a little bit of research. There's some fantastic producers out there. There's some fantastic butchers out there. It's about finding a good one. And once you've got that, you know, a lot of them are going to deliver. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to be a local butcher. My local butchers, hopefully none of them are watching, but they're terrible.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple that kind of, you know, they're loving their shop window there, put some rosemary tagged in with the lamb legs and stuff and make it look all fancy so it looks like it's a nice expensive butcher, but in reality it's the same meat you know you're buying from your supermarkets and stuff. So just do a bit of research. I'd rather buy it, admittedly I buy it online, so it still has a bit of travel to do, but I'd much rather buy it from Cornwall and it come overnight than buy it from the States and it do all those air miles and stuff from the States. We're doing our own farmers an injustice by cooking imported meat.
I think as well, another great tip for anyone who's looking for a local butcher that they can trust is first thing to look for is if they appear to be cutting the meat properly on site, buying in whole cows or half cows and actually cutting them. Because so many places will order stuff in frozen and just sell them. If you can go in somewhere and you can see a huge saw in the back, you know that at least they're doing the basics, then talk to them about what they can actually give you. And something I'd love to ask you as well, we've talked a lot about hot and fast method for brisket in the past, but no one's actually kind of talked about how someone would go about doing that if you're a beginner. All they see is low and slow, and that's the first thing you get if you're kind of YouTubing. What should people try and do if they want to do a hot fast brisket?
So I'm not sure where I learned the method, but I see somebody say, oh, you want to try cooking your brisket this way. And, you know, having done my fair share of overnight cooks, pre-children, of course, and, you know, been out there with the head torch on and umbrella and, you know, having sleepless nights with your alarm going off every hour so you can go and check on it, or your alarm going off at three so you can go and wrap your brisket, or your temperature alarm is going off all the time. You know, I've done my time doing those. I've done too many of those. So when somebody said, you know, I saw that you could do briskets in, you know, 6 or 7 hours, like that's I want to try that. And it turns out it works perfectly for grass-fed briskets. I buy mine from a place called Philip Warren Butchers. They've got their own farms, and if I don't use their own farms, they use kind of local trusted farmers. And they actually supply Smokestack. So Smokestack, obviously a popular barbecue restaurant in London. If it's good enough for Smokestack, who's literally one of the best barbecue restaurants in the UK, then, you know, it's good enough for anybody else. So, yeah, hot and fast. So you kind of get your brisket, you trim it up as normal. Instead of cooking it at 225, which again just seems to be a magic number that's come across from the States, everything has to be cooked at 225, otherwise you're doing it wrong. cook it at 300 degrees, so 300 Fahrenheit, 150 Celsius. Probably takes about 3 or 4 hours to build a nice bark on there. And once you've got a good bark, wrap it up. And then you could even crank your temperature up to 350, which is about 170, 175 Celsius, and until it's finished. It takes about 6 hours. I normally start probing the brisket, you know, after about 5 or 6 hours. Once my thermopen tells me it's kind of 93 degrees, I know it's nearly there. That's the time I want to keep a closer eye on it. And then I kind of go by feel. So you kind of, you know, you put your probe in. And if you can kind of hold it above it and then just drop it, and it kind of goes all the way through to the bottom with pretty much no resistance, then it's there or thereabouts. So 93 degrees onwards, they're not, British briskets, grass-fed ones, normally come off about 98, 99 degrees. So it's quite a high temperature, but they can take it, and, you know, they come off nice and juicy, nice and moist. But the key to it is, if you're cooking it in 6 hours, you want to give it a good rest as well. So at least a couple of hours rest. But if you're cooking it in 6 hours, you get up in the morning, you do your brisket in the morning, get up, always aim to have it finished 2 or 3 hours before you're ready to serve it, because then you can just keep it wrapped up in towels in a cool box. And I've had them in a cool box keep for 7-8 hours before. So get up at 7 in the morning, stick your brisket on by 8, by 4 o'clock you're all tucking into it, happy days, rather than having a sleepless night and trying to do.
Owen and I have got an experiment, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, like I said, there's no better way of learning than just getting stuck in. You can read as many books. I mean, next to me now, I've got probably about 70 barbecue books and stuff. And, you know, you have a flick through, you see something that catches your eye, you give it a try, and then they kind of just sit there gathering dust. YouTube videos, you know, a lot of the stuff you're going to watch on YouTube is American. So, you know, again, people watch that and they see the briskets and they wonder why they're not replicating it, because we're copying what they're doing. There's no better way to learn than just putting in the hours, just getting stuck in, or coming to a smoking out barbecue school.
Nice. There we are. Oh, funny enough, I was just about to say, where can people come and see you? So you can beat me to it.
Yeah, so the barbecue school is just outside of Portsmouth, so right on the south coast. It's a place called Cow Plain. It's at my house. That was touched earlier. I've got a huge garden, so I kind of built this 72 square meter shack at the end of it. That the missus was well chuffed about when we were measuring it all out and stuff. She's like, it's gonna take over the garden, but no, it doesn't. But it's a great space, especially when the sun's shining. You know, I've got a beer fridge in there. There's, you know, the barbecue classes, they're normally limited to 12 people. So, you know, it's a good number. People come along, they eat a lot, they learn a lot. Well, hopefully they learn a lot from my limited knowledge. No, but, you know, they learn, they eat a lot, they drink, we have a laugh. I try and put everyone at ease, try and get everyone talking to each other. You know, like I said, my background's sales, so I'm I'd like to think I'm quite good at kind of, you know, getting people kind of integrated. And you know, the reviews I've had so far have been about the fact that they felt so at ease. They felt like they've gone to a barbecue round of friends and they've met these new friends and stuff. So, you know, it's been well received. Hopefully it'll carry on that way. I've been delighted with how it's gone so far. So, here's to next year for it.
Great. Well, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on the podcast, Elky. And just quickly again, tell people where they can find you on socials, YouTube, etc.
Yeah, so obviously on Instagram under the Smoking Elk, and the same with YouTube. Just Google the Smoking Elk, and there's loads of videos on there. If you're into Kamado Joe cooking and stuff, there's a lot of Kamado Joe videos on there, but also some fire cooks and stuff. So YouTube, Instagram. I am on TikTok to try and keep up with the cool kids, but I haven't figured that out yet. But yeah, no, just search Smoking Elk, or my website's smokingelk.com, where you'll see dates available for classes. There's not many on there at the minute. So at the end of January, I'll probably release the first lot of classes for next year. So hopefully I'll see you guys or anybody watching on one of them.
That's great. Okay. Thank you so much for your time as well.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Thanks, Elky.
Cheers, Elky.
Bye.
That's it for another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Thank you so much to the Smoking Elk, or Elky, for taking the time to speak to us today, talking to us about his own journey, his barbecue school, and also ThermoPen. It's been fantastic learning more about all of those things. Christmas on the way. Why not have a look at some of those different ThermoPen bundles for the barbecue in your life? So you can find more about us looking at our website. You can Google Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. That'll bring you straight to us. Also through our Instagram, our Facebook. We've got a YouTube channel we'd love to see you on. And occasionally, like Elky said, with the cool kids, we're on TikTok as well. So keep an eye out for that. We also have a shop that we have various different affiliate programs and things on. And also you can buy some merch. So it would be great if you get the chance to go on there. It supports the podcast, and we could put anything that comes through that back into getting you the best guests. And until next time, keep on grilling. Today's episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.